Shalom, everyone. Everybody understands we are in a very, very important crossroads in history. We are facing events in hi historical importance that will affect humanity for decades and centuries. We can find in this parasha many hints about the meaning of the events, because whoever studies Kabbalah knows that whatever happens on the physical domain, which means whatever happens in the domain, in the frequency that you can see, hear, smell, understand with your logic, is only a branch, is only a shadow of the real event that is happening in the upper worlds, in the spiritual domain or spiritual dimension. And this parasha, especially Parashat Shlach Lecha, the book of Numbers, chapter 13, is especially very, very important one. The Parashat Shlach Lecha is centered around one of the most crucial stories in the history of the Israelite nation. This is a story of the sin of the spies. Who are the spies? The spies were the leaders of the 12 tribes of Israel in the desert, and we are talking in a point of time in which, after, let us say, we are talking about a year and 4 months after the Exodus. And the Moses and the children of Israel, they are right now at the south of what the border of Israel. They are in the entrance to the Holy Land, the Promised Land, and Moses is sending 12 people, chosen people, the best people, the leaders of the 12 tribes. You don't send as spies the leaders of the nation. You send somebody who's good at hiding and getting along. Somebody who can sneak in and sneak out and bring all the information. He's sending over the best people, because the story was not as about spying, as we read from verse 2, when God says to Moses, "Shlach lecha, send for yourself anashim, people, veyaturu et eretz Kanaan, and they will tour the land of Canaan." The word is not to spy. The verb to spy is veyaraglu. The word over here, vayaturu. And latur is the verb, as in English, tour, to tour. They are there to scope, see, experience the land, and bring back their experience. And of course, as we said before, they are the most important ones. How does that affect us today? How is that connected to the great conflict that we're seeing right now, Israel and Iran, Western civilization against Islamic civilization, the whole crash of civilizations? That what's happening right now is like a huge crossroad in the history of humanity. How is that connected? First of all, the story is like this. Moses is sending those people to tour the land, to experience the land. He tells them where to go. And of course, there's a logical thing, and you will see verse 18, chapter 13. Ve'item et haaretz mahi. You should see the land. What is it? You know, it's not for you to choose, because that's a promised land. The land was promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The land was promised to you when you left Egypt, was promised to you again on Mount Sinai, and who knows how many times later. So why do you have to use these words? It's like you can't just say, "Oh, God, we change our way. We want to go to Canada." Okay? So logically, you need to scope the land before you invade, and that's a good idea. However, there are some hints in the instructions of Moses that show us that something, there's a different agenda behind sending those people. And that is on verse 20. And what is that land? Is it fat or lean? Is there a tree in that land or ain? Ain could be translated as none, but there's another place this word is used. Ain is the infinite. So he's asking, the Zohar is saying, let's read it from the Zohar. Verse 9 in the Sulam commentary of Rabbi Ashlag on the Zohar. Tachaz, I'm reading the Zohar first, and I'm reading the Zohar, the words of the Zohar to awaken the power of spirituality, the power of awakening, so we can all go through these days and come out the best we can go, we can come out with. ולא דע בלכודוי, אלא כל עינון דזמיני למיקם, בכל דרה ודרה, כולו אחזי ליה למשה, ויתמר וכמוע חוויה. Translation. And come and see. Moses, if you're going to say that he did not know that he cannot enter the promised land, it's not right. He knew. Moses knew he cannot come to the promised land. However, he wanted to know some, to tap into that holiness before he leaves this world. And therefore, he sent those spies. Okay. What is the Zohar saying? The Zohar is saying Moses knew what will be the outcome of this event. He's sending 12 of the best people in the nation. They are the leaders, that they are most knowledgeable, most rightful, righteous people. They are the greatest leaders. Like, really, that it's, we're not talking about some really ridiculous leaders that we have today in many places, a long history, who just brought damage to their nations. We're talking about people who led the nation together, hand with hand, with Moses, okay? You can't just play nonsense when you're leading the nation with Moses when so many miracles happening all over the place, right? So the Zohar is saying Moses, he knew what will be the outcome. He just wanted to make sure. And we'll see through the words. And why is it important for us today? Because what was messed up in that great event of the spies coming back, I'll just make a short story for the ones who don't know the story. So the 12 great people, the greatest people in the land of Israel, not the land, the nation of Israel, the leaders of the nation, the heads of each of the 12 tribes, they go to tour the land and to bring their impression, in order to prepare the nation for the taking over of, again, the promised land. God gave us a promise. He gave us a promise that he will get us out of Egypt. He did. He gave us a promise. He's going to put us on a mission of changing the world. He did. He gave us superpowers on Mount Sinai. He promised and he gave. He gave us faith. He gave us knowledge. He gave us the manna, he gave us the clouds, he gave us the traveling well. More, what else can you ask for? And then he brought us to the promised land. How should we respond to something like this? It's like, okay, let's see what's coming next. All of those great miracles. Okay? We made it fighting, facing the Egyptian Empire. We got out against all logic. We made it crossing the Red Sea. We made it crossing the desert, staying alive and having the revelation. No other group of people in such magnitude had a revelation in such extent and survived. And survived to tell the story for the whole of humanity. Now, with all the miracles around, like basically walking over a cloud, right? Seven clouds, the seven clouds of honor that protected the nation in the desert. And now those great people enter the land and they come out, to make story short, they come back and they divide into two groups. Two of them, Joshua and Caleb, say, "This is an amazing land. It's a holy land. It's a special, miraculous land. It won't be easy, but God is with us. He was with us all the way. He promised us, let's do it. With faith, with God, with unity, there's nothing could stop us." However, 10 of the 12, they say this is a magical land. However, then comes the however. But the giants, they're powerful, they're strong. And on one hand, this land is magical. People grow to become giants in this land. It's a special land. You cannot be some simple person. You need to be a person of high attributes in order for that land to make you grow. And that's a land that consumes its inhabitants. Okay, so the people are listening. They listen to the 10 on one side. They say, we can't do it. There's no way we can do it. And there's another group of two say, we have to do it because God is with us. Who do we listen to? We listen to the 10. We listen to those who basically defame the land. They bring the badmouth, the holy land, the promised land. They badmouth really God's promise. And then the Israelite nation cry the whole night. What is the result? The result is the decree that all the people, that all the men that are of age 20 and up, will die in the desert in the next 40 years. And only after that generation, which is called Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert, or basically the generation of slavery, people think like slaves, they are not fit to enter the promised land and to become a free nation. That's why till today in Hebrew, when you want to say, when you have a shift, let's say you have a society, a community, a company, and there's a hurdle, there's a challenge, there's a big, big, big problem, okay? And everybody wants to go back to the old days, and they cannot see the greatness lying ahead. They cannot see the vision of getting out of the box and achieving the impossible, achieving there's something beyond the imagination, something that you need a lot, a leap of faith. Whenever you have those people pull everybody backwards, we call them in Hebrew, Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert, which means slaves who cannot come out of the slave mentality. And basically, we are humanity. We are facing exactly the gates into the promised land. Think about it as it is. Today, With modern technology, humanity can guarantee longevity, freedom, sustenance, protection to every human being. Never been like this in history. However, when you think like a slave, you are basically motivated by really low level desires. Competition, not in a good way. Competition, which means if they have, I won't have. That's a bad competition. Not a win-win, but a win-lose. Fear. That means that if I don't have billions, I won't be able to survive. And greed, which means the more I take, the better I become. Only slaves think like this. What does it mean, slaves? People who are enslaved to the bodily logic and desires. Small, limited, and vicious. So, humanity is facing a new era. A new era in which we realize that the 80 years that passed since World War II, we spoke about great ideas of freedom and equality, whatever. We spoke about great attributes of honesty, transparency, liberty, brotherhood, equality, all of that great words. And when we look today about all those institutions and movements and philosophies that came out about all of these virtues, and we look at the United Nations and it's fake. It's so corrupt. We look at all of these political movements that talk about liberty and equality, and it's all terribly corrupt. You look at all of those who declare day in and day out about equality and about virtues and stuff like this, and you realize it's all fake. And you look around and saying, like, who can lead us? First of all, we have to understand what the Zohar is teaching us, which is this is the tool to be able to go through the gate into the promised land, which means an era in which we walk the talk, in which we speak about liberty and equality, and we really believe it's possible. And we don't need to steal, we don't need to cheat, we do not need to discriminate in order to achieve those great values. The key words, and this is amazing, is when that Moses, let's go back to Moses, okay? Come and see. Moses was, I'm reading verse 8 in the Zohar, that just the verse before we just read. So I'm reading the translation because we want to do it as fast as possible. Come and see. Moses was like the sun. We know what's about the sun. The sun is a source of light, which is never ending. Okay? It's not affected by anything. Okay? When it's dark, it's because the earth is turning its back to the sun, which means relatively to where I am. Okay? That's why it's dark, not because the sun stopped shining. Okay, where if I laugh at the sun, if I ridicule the sun, if I badmouth the sun will still shine at me in the same way as the sun is shining at righteous people. So the sun is not affected. And that is the spiritual world. The spiritual world cannot be changed by our behavior. Moses was already there. He was in a chariot of that great power that is called the upper world, the spirituality, Zerampin, or Sfirat, the many ways to look at it. Moses wanted to enter the land, but God said to him, Moses, when it's time, the sun has to set, because As long as the sun is shining, the moon and the stars cannot shine. You are shining for a while already and guiding the Israelites out of Egypt. You guide them towards Mount Sinai. You guide them through all the obstacles and so on and the revelations. It's your inspiration, it's your work. But you have to understand, the Israelites are like the moon and the stars, and they cannot shine as long as you shine. And the creation is about the common people to shine, not about one great leader will do the job for you. And therefore, if we are talking about making every human being a creator of his own, because that is birthright, and without it, the cause, the reason of the creation cannot be fulfilled, cannot be manifested. Therefore, if you enter the promised land, how would the sun and the moon shine together? That's impossible. The sun has to set in order for the moon to shine. And therefore, you cannot enter the land. And if you want to connect to the land, you send those people. So you will know. What would you know? Those men, the greatest men, right? They reached the power of being the leaders of each tribe because they were the best. They will be 40 days without you. In that vortex that is called the Promised Land. And you will see if they can resist or withstand or shine when you're not around. And you will know. And that's exactly what happened. So we'll continue verse 9. Since Moses sent those people, those leaders, and they came back, and their reaction was not proper. It was totally awkward. Not proper. Okay? It was really wrong. The result was horrible. The day they came back, they left on the new moon of Tammuz, of a Cancer. They came back on the 9th of Av. And since that day, the 9th of Av became the most. How would you say the most ailing, sensitive day in Jewish history? The decree for them to die in the desert was on the 9th of Av. The destruction of the first temple was in the 9th of Av. The destruction of the second temple was in the 9th of Av. The expulsion of the Jews of Spain, who were the major community of Jews all over the world at that time, 1492, that was the 9th of Av. There were so many, that was a destruction of the backbone of Jewish civilization around that time. I'm talking about the Jewish community of Spain. That was like again and again and again. And now it's a time that we need to correct that exact problem of the spies. And what was the problem? Because they did not come back properly, lo shalach ot bizman acher, Moses did not try again. Till he saw the land by himself, he got God gave him the connection to the holiness of the Holy Land without the Israelite nation. Their time will come. Okay. Verse 10. Since Moses was instructing them to go to the Holy Land, what did he tell them? Hayesh ba'etz, is there a tree? V'chimahu shamar zeh, what did he say by that? V'chi tomar shelo yada im yesh ba'etz, he doesn't know there are trees in the Holy Land. Okay, 100 years ago, when Jews were starting to flock into the Promised Land, there were no trees. We planted them. Okay, and we did not have Moses. So what's the big deal? Ela kach amar Moshe. Moses said this, what, this way. אם יש בעץ, אני יודע שיכנס שם. If there is a tree, I know I can get in. What tree? The Zohar is asking. This is the tree of life. Which means if they could connect to the tree of life in the promised land, then Moses knew he it's time for him to come in. But if they cannot connect to the tree of life, I cannot come in. So that was basically a test. That was basically to show whether there were two stages for that test. One, for the leaders. They experienced the intensity of the land of Israel, and whoever been here knows how intense the land of Israel is and how intense Jerusalem is. And a lot of people can't stay here. It's too intense. The powers over here are very intense, and therefore they cannot stay here. Okay? They don't even want to come. It's too intense for them. Why? What's so intense over here? Okay, this is the gate of heaven, right? It says so. Jacob, when he wakes up in the morning after the dream, when he slept over the Holy of Holies without knowing that even, he said, this is the gate of heaven. He was not the only one. Billions of people on earth believe that the gate of heaven is here. And if you want to go to heaven, you have to come over here. And from here, you go up to heaven. Okay? If this is the gate of heaven, there's something special over here. But the point is, no one, remember, after the sin of Adam, there's a special angel at the gate of heaven. And he has the sword, the flashing hot sword, you know, that is there to guard the gateway of heaven. So what is that sword? So wherever it comes over here has to work much harder in order to stay in his sanity, or better than that, to stay or to become a functional, productive, positive human being. Now, so either we talk about the promised land as the geographical zone of the land of Israel, or we're talking about the era, the promised land era, in which the whole of humanity is going to be redeemed. Are you ready to be redeemed? Are you ready to experience redemption? For that, you need to do one thing, to take responsibility. And this, we have an amazing expression when they are coming back, the spies. Now the spies already. Now, they come and say something like this. You know, I'm going to the book of Numbers, chapter 13, verse 31. And the people that came with him said, we cannot come up to that nation living in this land. Ki chazako mimenu, they are stronger than us. What? You are 600,000 men from 20 to 60 fighting against what? In Canaan, a bunch of city-states. Tiny, small, what is the... How big they are? Nothing. We know archaeologically, nothing. They were slaves of the Egyptians till a year ago. And now you're afraid of them? What is the lesson over here? And then verse 32, Vayotziu dibat haaretz, and they defamed the land. אשר תאו אותה אל בני ישראל אמור, הארץ אשר עברנו בה לתור אותה, ארץ אוכלת יושביה. The land that we came to tour, this is a land that consumes its inhabitants, which today, in modern Hebrew, who you just see the person who belongs to the party of the spies, he loves this word, this verse. Eretz ochelet yoshvea. This land consumes its inhabitants. Look around. People die here, people this is, it's a dangerous place. A lot of people do never set foot in Israel just because of that thing. Oh, it's a very dangerous place. I live in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a very, very dangerous place. It's a so many problems in Jerusalem. You know what? I lived in North America, quite many cities. Okay, and I live in Jerusalem since 12 years already. Okay, and you know what? You walk out like early in the morning and you see little kids walk to school, 5 years old, 6 years old, 7 years old, 9, 10, and so on. They walk to school by themselves. They take the public transportation by themselves. They walk into the whole city to school by themselves and out by themselves. I didn't see any city in North America in which kids go without parents to school. What? You walk around and you see teenagers at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, midnight, in the summer, roaming the city, going to to the movies, eating ice cream. I've never seen any place like this that kids feel so safe. Oh, yeah, but it's a very dangerous city. I don't see that. Oh, we have problems here and there. It's all relative. The question is, bad-mouthing the state of Israel and Jerusalem? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Do you know that the longevity in Israel is higher almost than most country along the world? Around the world, how could you say it's the most dangerous place in the world? No, it's not. How could it be? It's all about the idea that we're talking about. We live in a generation that, on one hand, we have quality of life like never before, but that's neutral. It's depending on what do you do with that. Are you willing to take responsibility and to shine like the moon at night, or you need the sun to lead you and to shine for you? Very simple. What's the difference between the moon or the sun? The sun is the upper world. The light shines there unconditionally. The moon, that's something else. The moon has no light, only what it returns from the sun. Human beings do not have light unless the light generated by faith in the Almighty. When we have faith in the Almighty, we are loving, we're generous, we're productive, we are creative, we face challenges, we do not fall into problems. We do not focus on the problem because we focus on the solution. Why do we focus on the solution? Because we know we are not alone. And if we fail, there's God with us wherever we go. Doesn't matter how dark is the place. Doesn't matter how many mistakes we've committed. Okay? God is with us because there's only a way from now on. Up and above. In Hebrew, up and above is, there's one word for that, ness, a miracle. But the words, what I really want to emphasize is the end of that verse. So it's a land that eats up, consumes its inhabitants. People die like flies. So the commentators are saying the Canaanites were waiting for the spies. And they were sending, trying to look for them and hunt them down. So God sent them a plague, and they were busy burying their dead. Instead, so the spies were saying, oh, it's a dangerous place. Everybody dies from diseases. Whoever had faith said, oh, God is protecting us. And he sent a plague to them, so they're busy with their dead instead of hunting us down. So, how do you look at stuff? How do you look? People saying, oh, it's a terrible time, never been so bad. How many people want to go 100 years ago without running water in your house, without electricity, without smartphones, without computers, without cell phones, all of that stuff? Why you want to go back to that time? The question is, do you want to shine, to reflect the sun's light? The only way to reflect the sun's light is by having faith in God, which means having that faith that is one creator to this universe. And he created you for one purpose, to succeed. He is giving you opportunities right and left, up and down, back and forth. Every opportunity is not a test to fail you. It's an opportunity to prove you stronger, bigger, more successful. You failed the test, there will be another one and another one. That's why King Solomon says a righteous person will fall seven times and get up. Righteous people do not are not people do not make mistakes. The righteous person is a person that turns the mistake, the falling, into rising. And the end of the verse is very important. V'chol ha'am asher ra'inu betocha anshei midot. And all the nation that we've seen are anshei midot. Literally, anshei midot could be understood as big people. But you know, if you know a little bit of Hebrew, when we speak about the 13 attributes of mercy, it's Yud Gimel Midot. So it's attributes. Midot are also sefirot, illuminations. What does it mean, midot? Illumination in a limited way, which means God light cannot come infinitely into our lives. It has to come in a filtered state, midot. What does that mean? So let's read. What does it mean, midot? So there are first certain ways to explain that. So Rashi says, of course, Rashi always bring Rashi, the greatest commentator, 11th century France. He says the simple thing, you always bring the simple explanation. They're huge. They're huge. They were like 6 foot and more. No, 6 cubits. They're 3 meters and higher. Okay. And then he says, but it's also Madon. Midot come from the attribute of Madon. They're always the feisty. They're always fighting. They're only looking for a war. They also, it says, Ishmida. But then, thanks to Rabbi David Dutkevich, that brings an amazing explanation. It's all about the Midot, which means when we come to Israel and we talk about the measurement of light being revealed in the land of Israel, what it does, and Or HaChaim is saying, what does it mean about the midot? Kol she'enam anshei midot omdim chutz la leval tochal ha'otam ha'aretz. The land of Israel is very intense. In order to survive in that land, you need to have great attributes. Okay? What does it mean? You need to have values that are strong. You have to be a person with vision. Otherwise, if you want to live a comfortable, easy life, that's not the place for you. You know, a lot of people, they leave Israel and they move to the other countries. Why? I want quiet. It's too intense for me. So you have to be a person with vision, with virtues, with push and drive to live over here in Israel. But now it's not just Israel. The whole humanity is shifting towards another dimension. And here, what the discussion, it's a long discussion of many, many, of many commentators are saying you can pronounce about liberty and equality. Do you really believe that? In the moment of trial, the moment, the true, the real moment of, do you really follow integrity and honesty, or you just take what's comfortable, what's easy, and you take the bribery of whatever sort of is, and you just run away. Or you cave down and you simply sell all your vision for money, for fame, for whatever bribery. This is what we're talking about. That today it's very common. A lot of people, they speak about it's cheap to speak about values and virtues and so on. We saw them. But there's a name, they call them. Vesham reinu et ha-nefilim. And nefilim, that's a very powerful word in Hebrew. On one hand, nafil in Hebrew means a giant. But if you look carefully at the source of the word nafal, a falling one, which means on one hand, they look like giants because there's so much PR, make them huge. But when it comes to the real thing, they simply cave down and fall. So, right now, as humanity, we are walking into the promised land. Physically, we can turn this world today into heaven on earth, as the Zohar is calling the promised land, the heaven on earth. We have all the means for that, all the technologies that could afford us all enough food, healthy food, housing, security for every one of more than 8 billion human beings. What is the problem? That you are thinking as a slave, and therefore you're not capable of rising to the opportunity. And instead of sharing, instead of really holding to the virtues of faith, that's the only way, if you really have faith in the Almighty, you can hold on to honesty, integrity, and so on. You look at all of these people that are talking big, midot, big. When you say big houses, batei midot, okay? You're talking big, but if you don't have real faith, the stress, the intensity of modern life will make you corrupt. And we see that people leading big organizations that all about saving the earth. If they don't have faith, they won't be able to withstand the pressure and they will corrupt. You could see that. When Moses realized that the 12 great leaders, 10 of them, 10 out of 12, caved down, and the nation listened to them, not to Joshua and Caleb. Moses knew what God told him. It's not the time. I cannot enter the promised land. They cannot enter the promised land. They are not ready to be able to take the responsibility. Freedom, first of all, is a result of a personal responsibility for whatever we do. There's no redemption in a general way without the personal own redemption. You know, you cannot give freedom, happiness, and independence to people who are not capable of having that power of faith. This is a story. And then comes this amazing quote in the Zohar to explain to us where we are. And we read that. Just 2 days after October 7th, 23, I read that part from the Zohar, but this is from Shlach Lecha. This is from this exactly parasha. And what does it say? Okay, this is verse 173, 74. And he says as follows. He speaks about Mashiach ben Yosef. In the Zohar, there is a talk that repeats itself in many places about two messiahs, which means the messianic age will be divided into two stages. The first stage is called Mashiach ben Yosef, the Messiah, the son of Joseph. Why the son of Joseph? Joseph was the son of Rachel. Rachel symbolized the visible, logical reality. That's why Rachel is buried on the highway where everybody is, the physical reality. Joseph was successful in a way that everybody could see. He became the leader of Egypt and the success story of Egypt's economy. Okay, whatever he did, God made him successful, but everybody could see it, righteous and evil. Everybody could see his success. That was visible and clear. However, sometimes the Zohar calls this era also Mashiach ben Ephraim. Ephraim was Joseph's son. Ephraim comes from the word, the Zohar says, Ephel, ashes. The driest thing in the world is ashes. After the fire comes down, what's left is ashes. The ashes is very, very dry. You cannot grow stuff just from the ashes. Okay, so what is it talking about? That the first stage in the redemption will be the stage in which there's going to be a technological, physical, visible success. The whole world will move forward into freedom of knowledge, especially technology, but it says like it's going to be like a flood of knowledge. We are in the age of the flood of like deluge of knowledge. Okay. But it will be mostly physical. It will be dry, not spiritual. The nation of Israel will come back to its land, will resettle the barren mountains, will re-bloom the fields, and the fruits will start coming up again on the trees like before the destruction. Before the exile, the land will be happily accepting its children that came back from a long, long exile. You can find it all over the Ezekiel, the book of Ezekiel, the prophecies of Ezekiel, Isaiah, Jeremiah, and all the other prophets. All of them talk about the same sign, same thing. The country will be barren, and everybody will be astounded by the success story of the Israelites coming back, re-establishing their homeland. And then, when everybody is watching that success story, but it's a success story on what? On the physical plane. Everybody can see that. It's not very spiritual. It's like Israel did not become in the last 80 years a center of spirituality for the whole world. No, it doesn't. And then, who will rise in the region? The king of Persia. Persia is the previous name of Iran. And as Persia rises, they will take over many kingdoms. And we see that in the last few decades, how Iran is controlling Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, Baghdad, the capital of Iraq, Damascus, the capital of Syria, Beirut, the capital of Lebanon. And then the next thing, and Vehu yishlot al eretz hakdoshah bet chodesh. And then they will aim at controlling the holy land. And they will be able to take over the Holy Land for 12 months. That's terrible. And then it says, and he will control and kill many, including Mashiach ben Yosef. And then the king of Persia will fall, and holy divine people will take over the government. Okay. So I explained it just after the October 7th horrible massacre. The proxies of Iran, according to the plan of Iran, invaded the south of Israel. They slaughtered, they killed many. The plan was to do even more than that. The plan, as we know today, was to release all the armor of all the proxies of Iran and Iran to attack Israel by surprise and to take over the country. And they almost did it. However, something changed the decree. It says 12 months. We know, whoever knows a little bit Zohar, that on Rosh Hashanah, every human being is being written who's to live, who's to die. That is holding there till Yom Kippur. Then it's being sealed. But there's a second seal. And the second seal is on Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah, that's the last day of Sukkot. However, all of these decrees of the life of all of humanity is being released for 12 months on Simchat Torah. October 7th, 23 was Simchat Torah. The destinies of the life of all of humanity for 12 months was concentrated on that day. They got that day. So literally, they got the 12 months in one day. From that moment, how do we know that this is right? Because it says after that, Persia will fall. And we are witnessing right now with our own eyes how the mighty Persia, that even the US, everybody, nobody wanted to mess up with them. And we are just witnessing. Therefore, we realize right now their fall started on October 7th, when the Israeli army was paralyzed. However, the Israelis, a lot of them left their homes and simply gave away their lives in martyrdom like never before, that stopped that horrible massacre and finally reversed the horrible picture. And since that moment, Iran is falling step by step. First Iraq, first Hamas, then Hezbollah, Syria, Iraq, and all of these, every one of them are falling apart. And now we see the falling apart of the Iranian might. Nobody is right now afraid of Iran anymore, not even its own subjects. I'm not saying citizens, because they don't have civil rights in Iran. We are going to face that on the physical plane. What we have to look for is coming out of that spy slave mentality. If we want to cross that barrier, we have to take responsibility for our emotions. We are in at the gates of the promised land. Humanity can save itself. We need faith. We need to take responsibility. We need resilience and vision, and we need to be faithful for our values. And that can happen only with true faith with the Almighty, with the light of the infinite light of God. And that's when it says, when Moses is asking, is there a tree, the tree of life, or Ain, the infinite Almighty? He just wanted to know, are they capable of connecting to it? They couldn't. Now, the tikkun, the correction, facing something so amazing, the promised land of humanity. We are capable of reaching a just, equal society. But that needs to stop blaming, to take the opportunities, to stop defaming God's creation, looking for justice by creating it. This is what this teaching of the Zohar is about. And that's how we are going to have holy leaders taking over humanity. And that will be the right thing. Thank you so much.